you or I'll move back to if that was the case. Where did you go? You played this club.
Hello, Rabbi
Greidewitz. Hi, Sheila. How are you?
They were becoming groupies.
Yeah.
Where was this advertisement? Somebody just
yeah, I don't know. I didn't see any advertisements either.
I didn't either.
There was no advertisement.
No, so how do people know?
I found out about it. It was on the Katzimon, and I never opened up the Katzimon. There's the Yom groups. And I opened it up, and
okay. It had it. Oh, Katzimon. Someone from Katzimon told
us. It only came in at 12 o'clock.
Someone from Katzimon told
us. It only came in at 12 o'clock.
Okay.
How did you find
this?
The Beit HaVichai once a month shiur. It was on that list. It was on that list.
Okay, I missed that. Because I get that. I missed it. I always look to see if there's something on the Avram, Sharon, Menchez in there, one more down. Menchez, one more down. At first I took it, but then I decided on the side.
Rabbi Greidewitz.
Hi, how are you today?
Hi, everybody.
Hi, hello. How are you?
How are you?
Brooklyn.
What?
You should speak about Hanukkah too.
As we're sitting around in Berech Shmei, I say it in Ivrit.
I have in
the Rinat Yisrael,
right.
Have the Ivrit. Mizeh ben Elokim, lo Elokim, ani somech lo ben Elokim.
Well,
I guess it says
some say it's a reference to Christians. Yeah. An anti-Christian polemic. Now, that would raise a big issue on the Kadmut of the Zohar, because this is Berech Shmei is from the Zohar.
Okay.
And if you attribute the Zohar to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Christianity was not really. I mean, it was there, but it was not really a big deal. So this is one of the proofs that it dates from a later Moshe de Leon.
Okay, I just skipped that little piece. I don't know.
On the other hand, it is possible that Ben Elokim is an appellation for a Malach.
A Malach.
Malachim are called Ben Elokim. Look at the beginning of the book of Eel.
It says Ben, though. I mean, it doesn't say B'nai.
Okay,
at least a translation.
But it would seem
okay,
to be B'nai Elohim could be Malachim, so Ben Elohim could be a Malach.
Okay. All right. I don't know. It just seemed like something strange
some
stuck in there.
An anti-Christian poem.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
How did you know? I mean,
I.
Hello.
Okay, what's the most special?
Around.
You've been doing what you get.
Yeah.
You've been doing
not even on the weekends anymore.
That's right.
It's great that you asked. It's something that you want. So if I take a
what time do we finish?
Has to finish at 5.
So be doubling mine straight afterwards?
I don't know. You can ask. I mean, I have to leave at 5, okay, so I can't even stay for my... Okay. You can ask.
If anyone wants to have a mic,
okay. I hope I'll remember, but okay. Okay, hello everybody. Thank you for coming. I'll try to remember to announce at the end of the share, but in case I forget, I was just requested to announce that if people want to stay for Ma'ariv, there will be a Ma'ariv minyan right after the share. The share will end at 5 o'clock, although I will not be able to stay personally. I was asked to talk about the holiday of Hanukkah. You know that in the United States, this is not an issue in Israel at all, but in the United States, Hanukkah is in perpetual competition with a well-known holiday of another religion, also a native of this land as well. And as a result, people speak about what is called the December dilemma, in which we have to build up Hanukkah to compete with the big one. And as a result, in the Reform movement, there's a very, very interesting counter-reaction to say over and over and over again, Hanukkah's not important, Hanukkah's not important, Hanukkah's not important. They're trying to de-emphasize Hanukkah so people shouldn't make it equivalent to the other one. But the truth of the matter is that is, you know, unfounded. Hanukkah, in fact, of course it's a rabbinic holiday. Of course it does not have the Isur Melacha, we all know that. But the spiritual ideas of Hanukkah are very potent, they are very powerful. They are very relevant to the predicament of the Jewish people in the 21st century. They are relevant even in terms of physical security, but much more so in terms of the spiritual challenges that we face. So I will not de-emphasize Hanukkah. Hanukkah really is one of the most beautiful Zmanim that we have because of what it represents. But let me begin with a very, very simple question, which is historically quite complex. Why do we have a holiday called Hanukkah? What is Hanukkah celebrating? Now, the truth of the matter is, there is much more than one answer for that. If you go back to what are probably the earliest sources of the Hasmonean struggle against Antiochus and his army, really going back all the way to the second century before the Common Era, we look at the Book of the Maccabees, the Sefer Chashmonaim, or the Sefer Maccabim, and as you know, they probably were originally written in Greek, but we only have them in the Hebrew or partial Aramaic translations. In the Book of the Maccabees, particularly the Book of the Maccabees 1, which is the Apocrypha, it's not part of our Tanakh, of course, the story of the decrees of Antiochus, the anti-religious decrees, etc., and the war of the Chashmonaim against Antiochus, all of that is given in great detail, probably much more detail than you would be interested in, battle after battle, if you're a military strategist, all sorts of wars, guerrilla warfare and the like. And at the end we are told that the Chashmonaim regains custody of the Beit HaMikdash, and they cleanse the Beis HaMikdash from the tumah, the impurity, and they rededicated the temple. But there is no mention at all in the Book of the Maccabees of any flask of oil that was found that burned 8 days. That is not mentioned in the Book of the Maccabees at all. And if you ask why did they enact a holiday called Hanukkah, the Book of the Maccabees gives a very, very straightforward answer. Chanukah, of course, means dedication. The Beit HaMikdash was dedicated in an 8-day dedication ceremony, which is exactly the way it was done with the Mishkan. in which there were 7 days of consecration on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Dedication ceremonies are normally correlated to the number 8. And therefore, according to Maccabees 1, the holiday of Chanukah was to celebrate the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash that had been in the hands of the Yevanim for 3 years. By the way, the 3 years were literally day to day, because it is recorded that on the 25th of Kislev, the Yevanim entered the temple and contaminated it, and 3 years to the day on the 25th of Kislev, the Chashmonaim regained the Beit HaMikdash. By the way, the Book of the Maccabees gives a very convenient and beautiful and simple answer to the most famous question of Hanukkah, which is the question of the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef asks the question, if the miracle of Hanukkah was that a flask of oil that should have only burned for 1 day burns for 8 days, then the miracle of Hanukkah is only 7 days. It is not 8 days. Why do we have a holiday for 8 days? There are at least 500 answers to that question. I know that because I have seen a sefer that gives 500 answers to that question. I will not give you all of that. But under the Book of the Maccabees, it's actually very, very simple. The 8 days of Hanukkah is not because of any miracle concerning the flask of oil. Rather, it is the Chanukah Tabayit. The Chanukah Tabayit was 8 days. Now, I want to state at the outset that, God forbid, please do not assume that I'm telling you such a miracle did not happen. I certainly believe, as one who believes in Chazal, I absolutely believe that the miracle of the Pach HaShemen did happen. But all I'm saying is that is not the original, or that may not be the original reason why they made it a chag. In fact, the Maral himself, writing on his own without even looking at these sources, and perhaps not having access to them, makes an interesting point. He says, it is impossible that a holiday was made because of the miracle of the Pach HaShemen. We don't make Yomim Tovim just because of miracles unless they pertained to the salvation of Am Yisrael. We don't have a Yom Tov of Monday, for Mon, or whatever it is. We don't have a Yom Tov just because a miracle happens. I mean, after all, throughout the whole Second Temple period, there were many miracles that happened in the Beit HaMikdash, including the Ner Tamid not going out. There is no holiday celebrating that. The holiday can only be either because of something like the dedication of the Beit HaMikdash, or the military victory, or the reestablishment of Jewish rule, etc. So the Maral on his own himself makes the point that the historical origin of the holiday of Hanukkah is not because of the nes of the Pach HaShemen, and all I can say is the Maral is borne out by Maccabees number 1. Again, we are not, God forbid, we are not denying that great miracle, but all I'm saying is it was not, according to Maccabees 1, the reason for the Yom Tov. Now, there is a Maccabees 2, Sefer HaMakkabim 2, which was written at a different time, and it's very interesting, by the way, that the two books discuss the rebellion of the Chashmonaim from two different perspectives. Maccabees 1 emphasizes it as a political revolt, a revolutionary war to get independence. Maccabees 2 discusses it as religious martyrdom. So, for example, the famous stories of Hannah and the 7 sons who gave up their lives, all of that is in Maccabees 2. It's different perspectives. Maccabees 1 is more of a glorification of military heroism. Maccabees 2 is more of a glorification of the religious martyrdom of those who gave up their lives, Al Kiddush Hashem. Interesting perspective. The answer is both are true, but the different authors tended to emphasize different aspects. Maccabees 2 says something that is truly halachically bizarre, but it makes this case. It says that because the Yevanim had been occupying the Beit HaMikdash for 3 years, and now it's Hanukkah time, so the major celebration in the Beit HaMikdash, the longest one, was certainly Sukkot, which was 7 days plus Shmini Atzeret. And they did not celebrate Sukkot in the Beit HaMikdash that year. Therefore, Hanukkah was enacted as an 8-day chag to make up for the missing of Sukkot. Ad kedei kach, that Maccabees 2 actually says that Jews took lulav and etrog on Hanukkah. Now, this is halachically nonsensical, and it doesn't say the Chachamim did this, but the Habonam considered Sukkot as a possible makeup. Now,
As a general rule, let me just, and that's also why it's 8 days, right? 7 days Sukkot and 1 day Shmini Atzeret equals 8 days of Chanukah. Now, Chazal's yichus, Chazal's relationship to the apocryphal books anyway is very, very questionable. Chazal sometimes referred to them as the Svarim Chitzonim, and anyone that reads, which is what apocrypha means actually, and anyone that reads them doesn't have a share in the world to come. On the other hand, there's at least one apocryphal book, the Book of Ben Sira, which Chazal recognize it's not in Kisvei HaKodesh, but they do quote it as a source of wisdom and Musar. Ben Sira is very similar to Mishlei and the like. The Book of the Maccabees, the Book of the Chashmonaim, Bechlal, is not discussed at all. And in fact, the whole Talmud, both the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, have very, very little to say about the Hasmonean kings, and almost all of it is negative. They didn't like them very much, for reasons I will discuss. But I would like to say the following speculation. There is one, and of course, the idea that Chanukah would be makeup for Sukkot is halachically preposterous, and one could not imagine the Gemara would ever endorse such an idea, and it does not endorse such an idea. But what you see, a little bit as a matter of cultural anthropology, is a very, very fascinating idea that sometimes crazy minhagim that don't seem to have any rhyme or reason kind of survive somehow, and they make a strange appearance in the framework of halacha. And this might be such an example. In the Gemara in Shabbos, there's a very, very famous machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. How do we commemorate the Chanukah miracle? So Beit Shammai says you start with 8 and you go down. 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Beis Hillel says you go up 1, 2, 3. And we of course follow Beis Hillel. But in Beit Shammai, one of the reasons the Gemara gives, and I'll talk about this at more length later on in my remarks, but one of the reasons Beit Shammai says is that the Chanukah menorah lighting should follow the same scheme as the sacrifices of Sukkot. And we know that the characteristic of the sacrifices of Sukkot is that on the Musafim, that on the first day there were 13 bulls and you went down. So Beit Shammai says, same way you go down with the bulls of Sukkot, you go down with the candles of Chanukah. Now, all the Mefarshim have a lot of problems. What's the connection? And we give beautiful ideas. And in fact, I will give you a beautiful idea from the Sfas Emes to explain it homiletically. But, once again, if you want to take the academic view of a cultural anthropologist, of which I normally am not, one might actually suggest that this minhag was a remnant of the old belief from the second book of Maccabees that maybe permeated the common folk, that the 8 days of Chanukah was somehow a makeup for the holiday of Sukkot, and that is why Beit Shammai preserved the minhag, maybe even unconsciously, that you have to connect it to the Karbanah. So this might be a very interesting example of a folk custom that had no halachic justification, but after the fact, the Chachamim took, at least Beit Shammai took it, and he made it the framework of the ritual. But as I say, we don't pass him like Beit Shammai, so it wouldn't be relevant lahalacha lemaisa anyway. So it turns out that if we ask why we celebrate Chanukah, so Maccabees 1 says political independence plus dedication of the temple. Maccabees 2 says a religious replacement for Sukkot, which of course is not halachically tenable, but that's what it says. So and the point is, neither of them mention any story at all about a jar of oil that should have only burnt one day, that burned for 8 days. So where do we get the Pach HaShemen? So the Gemara in Shabbos quotes the whole miracle of the Pach HaShemen, and it is a brisa. And the source of the brisa is a document that is even earlier than the Mishnah, called Megillas Ta'anis. Megillas Ta'anis. Megillas Ta'anis literally means the scroll of fasting, but it's a very misleading title. It is actually an ancient listing of all of the festive days during the Second Temple period where you were not allowed to declare a fast or a eulogy. So Megillas Ta'anis is actually the days one is not allowed to fast. Now, if you think
that we Jews have a lot of holidays, Baruch Hashem, and it's good that we have. In the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, there were many, many more holidays. All sorts of things were celebrated. Various victories in wars, all sorts of events, etc. After the Churban, that got discontinued, we paskin that batla Megillas Tainis, but Megillas Tainis enumerates another 30, 40 days that we don't do. You can do Malacha, but that, you know, they were festive and the like. Now, in Megillas Tainis, Chanukah and Purim are mentioned. Torah holidays are not mentioned because they're in the Torah, but Chanukah and Purim are mentioned, and they are the survivors of Megillat Tainis. Megillat Tainis, by and large, is defunct except for Chanukah and Purim. And in Megillat Tainis, all of a sudden we hear for the first time about this great, great miracle of the Pach HaShemen. Now you have to know that although Megillat Tainit is the earliest written work of the Tanoim that we have, it is earlier than the Mishnah. At least parts of it are earlier than the Mishnah. But Megillat Tainit was written at least 100 to 150 years after the Chanukah story. It was not contemporaneous. It is way after the book of the Maccabees. Again, as a maimon, I am not at all suggesting, and I don't want to endanger my job by even suggesting this, and I don't want to suggest it, that the miracle didn't happen. But the miracle could have been, like many, many miracles, a privately preserved Masoret that you saw in the Beis Hamikdash, all sorts of miracles. It was not originally the basis for the Chag, but by the time of Megillat Tainis, it became the basis of the Chag. And there is a reason for this. And the primary reason for it is that the Chachamim had a great deal of disillusionment with the Hasmonean, the Hasmonaim revolution, and what they tried to accomplish. You might remember from your earlier life, George Orwell's book, Animal Farm, where the animals revolt. Again, this was his parody of the Russian Revolution, where the animals revolt in the interests of democracy and freedom and rights and egalitarianism, and eventually some animals just become more dominant and they turn into the very thing that they try to defeat. And Orwell was suggesting that, of course, is what happened. It happened in the French Revolution, and that's what happened in the Russian Revolution, where certainly Stalin was not really much better than the Tsar. It could have been much worse as well. And really, this is what happened to the Hasmonaim. Remember that the war of the Hasmonaim was not one of political independence. It was one of religious freedom, that Antiochus was trying to impose a Hellenization. Alexander the Great also tried, going all the way back, also tried to impose Hellenization, but not through coercion. Alexander the Great was using assimilation. He was using the carrot of assimilation by creating this wonderful Greek culture and spreading it. And many, many Jews took the bait. Many Jews didn't have to be forced to do anything. They just went with the game plan. But Antiochus was a little impatient. He wanted to rush things along. And he was the one that promulgated various anti-Torah decrees, not keeping Shabbos, not keeping Rosh Chodesh, not practicing Brit Milah, not doing mitzvot publicly, and the like. There were many, many Jews, it is recorded in both books of the Maccabees, and we know all this story, who stopped practicing circumcision, or even in order to participate in athletic games, or even if they had circumcision, to surgically undo it, or stretch the foreskin, and the like. And the Hasmonaim were fighting to establish the primacy of Torah and Yiddishkeit, Emunah in Hashem. And many, many Jews thought they were fanatic. They were the first century BCE, the Haredim, or whatever it would be. They were the fanatics who didn't go with the game plan. They did not have necessarily a lot of popular support, at least initially, but they persevered so that the Torah could be kept. Wonderful idea. And indeed, the Ramban writes that the initial Hasmonaim were Tzadikei Elyon. Matisyo, certainly, and his sons. They were righteous people. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky even points out that when they established a monarchy, which the Ramban says was sinful, because they were Kohanim, and monarchy should go to Shevet Yehuda, and the Ramban actually says that's why they eventually were wiped out. But Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky pointed out that if you look at the coins that were minted by Shimon, who was the son of Matisyo, the last surviving Maccabee, who was proclaimed the head of the Jewish state, His coins say the word Nisi Yisrael, and Rav Yaakov wants to be Madaik. He didn't use the title Melech Yisrael, because he knew that he didn't have the right to be Melech Yisrael, but he was interim Nasi. So they were great, they were tzaddikim. But what happened over the next 100 or 150 years or so is exactly George Orwell. He must have read the Book of the Maccabees. What happened was the Hasmonaim, the Hasmonean kings, became the very enemy that they tried to defeat. The very enemy. They became Hellenistic. They became enamored with Greek culture. They became persecutors of the Chachamim. So, and of course, even politically, eventually, by the time Megillas Tanis was written and the Mishnah was written, the Hasmonean dynasty collapsed of its own internal Sinat Chinam and Roman intervention. So what's going on? When we have Megillah Tanit and we have the Mishnah, what are we going to say? Oh, Hanukkah is a great celebration of political independence from foreign domination. Number one, the Romans aren't going to be too happy about that. You're going to see candles being lit. I say, what are you lighting candles? Well, we're celebrating the victory of a Jewish minority against an oppressive foreign empire. Not good. Second of all, what are you going to say? We are celebrating the establishment of a spiritual Jewish state to replace the assimilation and secularism of Hellenism, or paganism of Hellenism. Well, the Hasmonaim didn't do that. They became their worst enemy. They became their worst enemy. So politically, the Hasmonean dynasty was a failure. And spiritually, it was a failure. So what are you going to celebrate? As a result, Hanukkah got redefined in some ways, that it was no longer a celebration of political and military victory, although those themes remain. It was no longer even a celebration of a state that is based on Torah and Emunah, because it was a failed state. But we talk about the miracles of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps us and protects us, as seen in the idea of the candle not going out, which is a metaphor. Besides the miracle, it is also a metaphor for the notion that Hashem's light will always be there to sustain us. So the point that might be suggested, therefore, is that Hanukkah undergoes a transition in what it represented. Now, I do want to point out another thing, which is a bit of an inexplicable point. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Do I have to start from the beginning? Or? Okay. Okay. All right. So there is the Hanukkah 1 and the Hanukkah 2. It is a very interesting point. I just want to point out yet another source is Josephus. Now, Josephus, you know, lived. Of course, he was involved in the events of the second, the Churban by Hasheni, the Roman War. And he is the one who first uses the term that in modern Israel people refer to Hanukkah as Chag Ha'urim. And he then says, why is it called Chag Ha'urim? So he did, well, that's kind of a stupid question. Well, you light candles. He doesn't say that. He says, it's called Chag Ha'urim because to celebrate military victories, it was common to make bonfires. That's very inexplicable. It almost seems to be as if he was unaware of a mitzvah of lighting candles. You know, it's just a little strange. So there's a lot of unusual factors about Hanukkah, again, it's something to think about. We have the books of the Maccabees, which are the earlier sources. We have Megillat Tanit, which is later than that. Then we have Josephus. Then we have the Mishnah. Now, the Mishnah itself says almost nothing about Hanukkah. The Mishnah says almost nothing. Hanukkah is mentioned in a very oblique, indirect way. The Gemara in Bava Kamma discusses, what if I have a camel that has flax on its back? long, long strands of flax, and the flax gets ignited with through my fire. In other words, I have a fire, you have a camel. Your camel's flax gets ignited by my fire, and then somebody's house is set on fire. Who is obligated to pay for the burnt down house? The owner of the camel or the owner of the fire? So the Talmud says, it all depends if you were keeping your fire outside or inside. If I kept my fire inside my store, but your flax went into my store, it's not my fault, the owner of the camel. But if I was keeping my fire in the street where I shouldn't have kept it, then I'm liable. But then Rabbi Yehuda says, that's only true during the year. But if it's Hanukkah, where you're supposed to light outside, the owner of the fire is patur. That is the only place in the Mishnah where Hanukkah is discussed, some crazy little case. Hanukkah was very much de-emphasized. And again, some say because it was a dangerous holiday because of the Romans, and some say it was Rav Yehuda HaNasi's own disdain, the Chassam Sofer says, that the Chashmonaim took Malchus, which they shouldn't have, because remember, Yehuda HaNasi is from Beis David, and the Chashmonaim were a failed monarchy. Again, it is so amazing, if you just think about this, if you go through the entire Talmud, it's almost as if the Chachamim were living in a parallel universe. In the time of Hillel and Shammai, you have Yanai HaMelech and all of these Hasmoneans, and the Chachamim just keep away, just ignored them. They were a force for negativity, and the less we have to do with them, the better. Okay. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of that historical background that I think is really very, very, very interesting. And two, as I say, Maccabees 1 and Maccabees 2 gives you two different perspectives on the struggle. Military prowess versus willingness to give your life al Kiddush Hashem. It's very interesting. If you think about Holocaust commemorations, you find a very similar dichotomy. Historically, as you know, the Yom HaShoah was connected, is connected to the rising of the Warsaw Ghetto. And of course, that was a very heroic undertaking. Absolutely, that deserves respect and commemoration. But you should also be aware, I'm sure many of you are aware, that there was a bit of debate on this issue, because by emphasizing the Warsaw Ghetto as the paradigm of Jewish heroism, there might be, again, I don't mean to take positions on this, but there might be the intimation that the Jews who passively went to their death like sheep to the slaughter, perhaps did not behave a proper way. In other words, the notion is there are many types of heroism. There is the heroism of fighting and risking your life, and there is the heroism of standing up al Kiddush Hashem and going to your death with dignity and preservation of respect and faith in Hashem. And these are different models of heroism, all of which are heroic and all of which are deserving of being remembered. And this is exactly the dichotomy that appears in Maccabees 1 and Maccabees 2. Very, very fascinating how different historical writers, and we can talk about it as works of history because these are not holy works. These are not part of Kisvei HaKodesh. So we can analyze it like any secular history, how the different authors took different fragments of a total truth and what they chose to emphasize and what they chose not to emphasize. Again, it's very, very fascinating. Okay. But now I want to focus on the part of the story that is most familiar to us, and that is the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos. Again, the Mishnah says almost nothing, but the Gemara says, "My Chanukah." Again, in a discussion of Shabbos candles, it moves to Chanukah candles. This is Perek B'Mem Adlikin. And it mentions that there are three different ways you can fulfill the mitzvah of Hanukkah. There is basic, there is mahadrin, that sounds like the restaurants in Israel, and then there's mahadrin min ha-mahadrin. Basic is quite surprising. If I want to fulfill, let's say I say, I'm not a tzaddik, I just want to be yotzei. All you need is one candle every night. So if I have a family of 10 people, night one, I light one candle. And even night eight, one candle. One candle every night covers everybody in your family. That's to be yotzei. That's basic mitzvah. But then it says, mahadrin, if you want to do the mitzvah in a beautiful way, so then you should light one candle for every member of your family. Now that's still nothing like we do it. That means if I have 10 people in my family, day one, night one, 10 candles, that's all. Night eight, 10 candles. That's Mahadrin. But then we have super duper Mahadrin. But if you want to be Mahadrin min HaMahadrin, so then you want to count according to the days, and that is the Machlokes, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, where Beis Hillel says, start with one and go up. Beis Shammai says, start with eight and go down. And of course, as is always the case, almost always the case, when there's a Machlokes, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, we follow Beis Hillel. Now, there is a Machlokes, Rishonim, and this is a Machlokes, Ashkenazim and Sephardim. If you want to do the highest level, do you include the middle level? So for example, if I have 10 people in my household, and I want to do the highest level, let's say on the last day of Hanukkah, do I light 8 candles, or do we light 80 candles? The Shita of the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber, is if you want to light at the highest level of Minyan HaYamim, only one person should light. Because if there's 80 candles, you're not people who walk by aren't going to know what day it is. So that is the minhag of many Sfardim who follow the Mechaber, that only one menorah is lit. Because we want to do Mahadrin min HaMahadrin. And if you're doing Mahadrin min HaMahadrin, you don't do Mahadrin. Because if you would do Mahadrin, it wouldn't be Mahadrin min HaMahadrin anymore. Because the Yomim gets thrown off. But those of us who are Ashkenazim follow the Pesach of the Ramah. And again, it's based on earlier Rishonim. And the Ramah basically says that Mahadrin min HaMahadrin also includes Mahadrin. And therefore there should be a menorah for all of the B'nai Bayit, with the possible exception, even that's a machlokes, of husband and wife. Again, many say that even like the Ramah, husband and wife only have one menorah, because ishto kagufo. On the other hand, others say even husband and wife should have separate menorahs. Okay, that's a machlokes. Now, this is already a very unusual mitzvah for Hanukkah, that we say, not only mahadrin, not again, hider mitzvah, to do a mitzvah in a beautiful way is, of course, every mitzvah is that way. Zeh keli v'yanveyu, this is my God and I will glorify him, that one should always try to do mitzvot in a beautiful way. But I can prove to you, arithmetically, that the various options given for Hanukkah lighting cannot be because of the general rule of hider mitzvah. And the proof is this. The Gemara in Bava Kamma says, how much extra money do you have to add on to your price for hider mitzvah? Let's take an esrog. If I could get a kosher esrog for X amount of money, if I could get a kosher esrog for X amount of money, X amount of shekel or dollars, how much extra do I have to pay for a muhudar to make it more beautiful? So the Gemara says, I don't have to add more than 50%. So that would mean, if I could get a kosher esrog for $30, this really dates me, I think, I wouldn't have to add more than $15, meaning $45. I wouldn't have to spend $60. Now, obviously, if the basic mitzvah is one candle, and I make it eight, candles maybe aren't expensive, but whatever it is, that's much more than 50%. That is 800%. And over the days as well. Right? So therefore, the idea of Mahadrin is not simply the generic law of Hider Mitzvah, but rather it's a unique principle for Hanukkah, that Hanukkah, it is part of the mitzvah itself to do it behidur. In other words, it's not the same as a nice lulav. Although a nice esrog might also be pre-Eitz Hadar. So why is that so? What is the shaychut between hidur and Hanukkah? So I'm going to give you two answers. One is from the Chidushi Harim, the first Ger Rebbe, and the other is from a Litvisha Darshan, the Kehelas Yitzchak of the 19th century. And I think in a broader perspective, we get two ideas of Hanukkah emerging from it. The Chiddushei Arim, the first Sgeir Rebbe, answers this kasha with another kasha. And this is a kasha all the Rishonim ask. If you focus on the miracle of the oil for a moment, because once we're in the Gemara does shift the emphasis to the Pach HaShemen, right? Remember, so we're switching emphasis over here, although the older themes get preserved. That's why, by the way, the Al HaNisim only mentions the war. The Al HaNisim is very old. The Al HaNisim is from the Zaman of the Chashmonaim itself. It is like finding a fly trapped in amber. You are actually finding a contemporaneous account of what the miracle is. That's very, very significant. But once we're into the Gemara, we are focusing on the Pach HaShemen. There's no question about that. So people ask the question. The Rishonim ask the question. There is a print. What happened? They had enough oil, pure oil, to light for one day, but all the other oil was tameh. Well, the halacha is that although an individual person, I cannot bring tameh things as a korban, but when you have a korban sibor, a communal offering, this is the principle called tuma hutra b'tzibor. The laws of impurity in the Beit HaMikdash are suspended when it is a communal need. This is a halacha. Now, lighting the menorah every day in the Beis HaMikdash, every day in the Beis HaMikdash, was a korban sibor. It was not an individual thing. We were doing it on behalf of the Kohen was doing it on behalf of Am Yisrael. On behalf of Am Yisrael. If that is the case, why did Hashem have to do a miracle at all? Day one, they light with pure oil. And day two, they'll light with impure oil. And day three, until they have enough time to get pure oil. The whole miracle was superfluous. It's an unnecessary miracle. Chiddushei Arim says, Hashem showed His love for us by giving us the ability to do a mitzvah in the most beautiful way possible, even though it was not technically necessary. In other words, even if Tumah Hutra B'Tzibor, it is a Hidur Mitzvah to use pure oil. Hashem wanted us to do the Mitzvah B'Hidur. So if the whole miracle of Chanukah is Hashem wanted to enable us to do the Mitzvah B'Hidur, so we reciprocate. We do the Mitzvah B'hidur. The miracle of Chanukah was a Hidur Mitzvah miracle. The Chiddushei Arim goes on and says, in many, many ways, this shows Hashem's love more than things that are maybe more important. For example, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu prevents us from being destroyed, even though that's very important, but kind of, He has to do that, you know. He made promises, you know. What do they say? They say, what's the German, the Jewish German poet? Heinrich Heine, as I pronounce it. He was an apikoros. I shouldn't even be quoted. Yeah, Heine. He was a kifer and he was not good. But his last words in his deathbed, somebody said he should do tshuva or something. So he said, God will forgive me. That's His business. That's His job, you know. Okay. Excuse me for even quoting that. But the point basically is that if Hashem doesn't let us die, that does not yet show a depth of love. Because even if, you know, we're not in God's good graces, you know, He'll save us in the merit of the Avos or whatever it is. But if Hashem does something He doesn't have to do, that we could live without, it's luxury. It's like the difference between giving somebody some bread and water so they don't drop dead, and making somebody like a wonderful roast or a pie or something. You didn't have to do it. He didn't need it. But by giving them more than they need, that becomes an act of love and friendship and care. And the Chiddushei Arim says, the whole miracle of Hanukkah in that way was a superfluous, unnecessary miracle so we could serve Hashem in a beautiful way, so we reciprocate. That is the Chiddushei Arim's answer of why we have levels of Mahadrin for Ner Hanukkah. Now the Koheles Yitzchak gives another teretz, and he raises an interesting question. It's a little technical, but not too much so. The one jar of oil, all the oil was tameh, but there was one jar of oil that was sealed with the chotam of the Kohen Gadol, that had not been tampered with, and that oil was kosher. Now the question is, why is there the seal of the Kohen Gadol? Kohen Gadol was not the custodian of the oil. Well, the answer is, there was a daily meal offering that the Kohen Gadol had to bring from his own property in the morning and in the afternoon, and this was called Chavitei Kohen Gadol. And we have to assume this was not a jar of menorah oil, this was a jar of mincha oil that you mix with the flour. But that raises a real halachic problem, because the quality of oil that you need for menorah is grade A, with no sediment or cloudiness. But the oil that you use for mincha can be grade B, that is pressed with pieces of olive in it. So grade B oil is not kosher for the menorah. So how could we even use that jar of oil if it's mincha oil? Answer, it must have been that the anonymous Kohen Gadol, maybe it was Matisyahu himself, wanted to bring his meal offering with Heder Mitzvah. So he packed grade A oil for mincha, which enabled us to have one day of oil. Which means the following. If we would not have had that pure oil for day one, there would have been no miracle. Because what Hashem did is Hashem caused that pure oil to keep on burning. If there wouldn't have been that pure oil, there wouldn't have been a miracle. So why was there a miracle? Only because the Kohen Gadol did Heder Mitzvah. And therefore, we celebrate by Heder Mitzvah. So if you look at these two answers, again, they're technical answers, but they do emphasize two different facets. The Chiddushei Arim is emphasizing the menorah as symbolic of the blessings that Hashem gives us. Hashem gives us so much kindness, so much love, so much goodness, more than we deserve and more than we even need for survival. And therefore we thank Him by doing mitzvahs beautifully, because He gave us a miracle of Heder that He didn't have to do to show His love and affection for Am Yisrael. And therefore, when I look at the menorah, I see the light of the Shekhinah illuminating the world and illuminating our hearts. The Geulas Yitzchak is saying another point, that the miracle of Hanukkah shows the devotion and care of Am Yisrael in serving Hashem. That here you have a person at times of great persecution who still thought not only of doing a mitzvah in a minimal way, but of doing a mitzvah, going beyond the law, even in times of stress. And therefore the menorah is not only the light of the Shekhinah, but it's the radiance of our own neshamot, as it says, Ner Hashem Nishmat Adam. So when you look at the Chanukah lights, you're seeing a double reflection. You're seeing the light of Hashem, and you're seeing the light of your neshama. And therefore it is both a celebration, just as Gemara in Brachos says, we wear tefillin and Hashem wears tefillin. In our tefillin is a celebration of the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the unity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in Hashem's tefillin, Mi ki amcha Yisrael goyachot be'oretz. That's Hashem's tefillin. And so the lights of Hanukkah are the Shekhinah that comes into the world, as well as the radiance that exists within our neshama. So from these technical answers, you see these two perspectives and the like. I should mention as well that it is brought down in Sforim, going with the idea that the lights represent the lights of the Shekhinah. The total number of candles we light during Hanukkah, not counting the Shamash, is 36 candles. If you add 1 to 8, you have 36 candles. And it mentions that there were 36 hours of the first day, 3 days of creation, where there was a divine light, because the sun was not created till the fourth day. So for Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, the Yom, the 12 hours of Yom, were manifested and expressed through the Or HaGanuz, through the Or of the Shekhinah, that then became Ganuz. So it is brought down in Sifrei Kabbalah that the 36 Neros of Hanukkah bring back into the world
the 36 hours of the hidden light that existed for the first 3 days of creation. That is why many have a minhag to sit by the lights and to actually watch. Of course, you're not allowed to read by the lights. That's why we have shamash and the light. But there is the union of being mistakel b'neiros. You find it particularly among Hasidim and among Hasidish rebbis. Certainly, they literally stare at the lights because it is the aura of the Shekhinah that comes in. Okay. Now let's go a little further. And once we reach the level of Mahadrin min HaMahadrin, we then have the Machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, where Beis Shammai says 8 and you go down, and Beis Hillel says 1 and you go up. The Gemara then proceeds to give us 2 explanations for the Machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. The first explanation that it gives seems to be a tautology. It seems to be nothing more than restating what they're arguing about. And that is, Beis Hillel says you go up because you're looking at the days as they have passed, or that you're, right, so on the first day, there's been one day of miracle, or there is one day of miracle. By the eighth day, there have been, including last day, 8 days. In other words, you're looking at the past. And Beis Shammai says you're looking at what's coming down the pike. So on the first day, there will be 8 days of Nes. On the last day, there's only going to be 1 day of Nes. But that doesn't really explain anything. That just says what they say. So I saw there's a very interesting essay by the very, very great Talmud Chacham, Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, who was he lived in Eretz Yisrael, he was a rabbi in Russia, but he really had many, many lives. He was a Gadol B'Torah, he was a Chabad Chassid, he was a Mizrahi Zionist, and he was very good friends with the Brisker Rav and Rav Kook, all sorts of Gedolim who you might not assume would be that connected to each other. But Rav Zevin managed to build many, many bridges. And he was also, I say, the founding editor of the Encyclopedia Talmudis. He wrote many, many essays in a very beautiful modern Hebrew. And in one of his essays, he discusses an approach to how you analyze Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel generally. And all of us know that usually Beis Hillel is lenient and Beis Shammai is strict. But leniency and strictness don't seem to explain Hanukkah. Start with 8 or start with 1. What does that have to do with being Machmir and Mekam? So Rav Zevin says perhaps we can generalize and go into a deeper insight. That is, Beis Shammai is an idealist. He looks at the potentialities that exist in the world. Ideally, the world should be run with Midas Hadin. And therefore, Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai is Machmer, because he looks at the world the way Hashem intended to create it. The way it should be. He looks at Koach and not Poel. He looks at potentiality and not actualization. That's why he's Machmir. Beis Hillel looks at the imperfect actualization of the potential. And in this imperfect world where we're so weak, we are Mako because HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to be Mishtatef, Rachamim, and Din. Now if you understand the idea that Beis Shammai is the idealist, and Beis Hillel is the realist, so to speak. This actually explains the miracle. Oh, thank you. This actually explains the miracle of Hanukkah itself, this machlokas. Because if you're looking at potential, day one, Hashem put 8 days of koach in the oil. By day 8, there's only 1 day of koach in the oil. So Beis Shammai, who looks at koach and not poel, will go down because the koach diminished with the passage of time. Beis Hillel, who looks at actualization, the actualization is based on what we perceive. Day one, we didn't perceive 8 days of miracle, right? So Rav Zevin quite ingeniously links the Chumrah and the Kula theme with the potential and the actualization theme, and therefore, that is how he does the first explanation of the Gemara. All right. But then the Gemara gives a second explanation. And here, Beis Hillel is very easy to understand. Beis Hillel says you go up because Malin Bakodesh. You go up in holiness. That sounds simple. Beis Shammai says
we compare it to the korbanot of Sukkos. Now, I already told you historically what that would mean, but now I want to share with you a thought of the Sfas Emes. The big problem is, what on earth is the connection between Hanukkah lighting and the korbanot of Sukkos? Again, I gave you a historical explanation. The Sfas Emes wants to understand it in a more spiritual sense. And here's what the Sfas Emes says. We know, of course, that the total number of parim that were brought on Sukkot are 70. And the Gemara itself says that they represent the 70 nations of the world. And since as we approach Geula, as we approach Mashiach, their power will get weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker, we bring the korbanot to be machlish, the koach of the umot that are trying to destroy us, physically and spiritually. And if you ask the question, how can we talk about the umos getting weaker and weaker as we approach Mashiach, when unfortunately, Lezareinu HaGadol, we have the rise of ISIS and terrorism and Islamic fundamentalism and all sorts of threats of violence in which the whole world is being held hostage, and we, of course, in Eretz Israel, bear such a brunt of suffering. It's hard to understand. But the way the Svarim describe it, again, it's hard to understand, is these are the final death throes before the coming of Mashiach. Meaning, just as before a candle goes out, there's a last burst of energy. Before a person dies, there's a last gasp of strength. So too, this is a, again, it has real repercussions for us, but this is a hiccup, so to speak. This is the last stand before the evil collapses. And we're zocheh to geula, again, may it be, b'mehira v'yameinu, in that way. But therefore, that is the parei achad. The parei achad represent the kiloyon hara, the diminution of evil, through these korbanos and the like. So, based on this, the Sfas Emes suggests that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are both focusing on the nerot as a metaphor for our neshama. And the Hadlakas Ner of Hanukkah is a symbolic way of perfecting ourselves. Because we can't really destroy the evil out there until we destroy the evil within us. But the Machlokas is, how do you do it? Beis Shammai views fire through the metaphor of that which burns away the bad. Beis Shammai says, take your negative qualities and surgically burn them away, one by one, to transcend egotism, anger, hatred, laziness, selfishness. So Beis Shammai's type of tshuva, which is called Sur Meira, the hopeful trajectory would be, you have less to do. I start off with 8 things to get rid of. 8. In other words, if you look at fire as that which is Soref Umechaleh, and you're, which is like the Parei Achag, that's his comparison. Just like the Parei Achag represents the Pechitut of evil, so the Neros of Hanukkah is Soref Umechaleh, the Ra within me. And therefore I move through a Pocheis V'Holech. But Beis Hillel says, that doesn't really work for us. Because it might be true that in an ideal world, see, even this is focusing on the ideal versus the practical. In an ideal world, I should be able to look at myself honestly and identify my pagamim, my chesronot, my averot, and simply work on myself. In reality, it often works the other way around. We get depressed. We get despondent. We get hopeless. And therefore, Beis Hillel says, the imagery of Ner as that which is metaken is not the Ner that burns away your flaws, but the Ner that increases your goodness. Meaning, you do tshuva by building the positive aspects of your personality. And by building the positives within yourself, the dark corners automatically get dispelled. Because Or is Doche Es HaChoshech. And therefore, Beis Shammai views the Neirot as that which burns and destroys. And that's the connection to the Parei Achad. Beis Hillel views the Ner as that which illuminates and warms. And this is the tshuva of Sur Meira versus the tshuva of Asei Tov. Perhaps this might be Musar versus Hasidus. Again, this is a great simplification. So it turns out that the Shita Samusar is following Beis Shammai, which would raise some halachic problems, but at least from the Sfas Emesis perspective, this tshuva comes not so much by focusing on our failings and our shortcomings, but by focusing on our strengths and building those strengths. And as we build the strengths, the choshech is nistalek by itself, because you turn on the lights, there's going to be less choshech. So there are tremendous, tremendous lessons here. Let me just end with one final point, and that is, I have to go back to history a little bit, because the history is very illuminating. We tend to think, and I have to admit that the Rambam seems to describe it this way, that the reclaiming of the Beit HaMikdash and the lighting of the menorah was the culmination of the military victory. Meaning, we've ended the war with the Yavanim. In point of fact, that is not at all true. In point of fact, the war against the Yavanim lasted for more than 25 years until Shimon was able to proclaim himself, or was proclaimed, Nisi Yisrael. The miracle of the Pach HaShemen did not occur at the end of the struggle. The miracle of the Pach HaShemen occurred towards the beginning of the struggle. Now granted, it was a tremendously important milestone, regaining the Beit HaMikdash. But we regained the Beit HaMikdash, and we're still in the middle of a devastating war that will last more than 25 years. Now if you think about this, it is actually much more meaningful that the Nes of the Pach HaShemen occurred then. Because here you have a small group of Jews under Mantishion, she was not alive anymore, but under the Maccabim, who are waging war against the most powerful military forces in the world, who do not have the support of their own fellow Jewish citizens, who think they're fanatic and old-fashioned and are simply not adapting to the times. They should be a progressive second century BCE citizen, however they would refer to it then, like live in the first century and the like. And at some point, one could understand if the Chashmonaim would just say, what is the use of going on? Today we had a victory in a guerrilla warfare. What's going to be tomorrow? What's going to be the day after? Yes, yes, we'll be faithful to Hashem, but let's just go to the caves. Let's just go to the outlying areas where nobody's going to find us. Remember, Antiochus was not the KGB. I mean, if you wanted to be religious in some outlying area, you could probably get away with it. And one could understand if the Chashanam would just say, there's no way we can be successful. What is the use? So what is Hashem showing them in the miracle of the oil? Here, there's only one day of oil. There's no way it's going to last at all. And yet, what is the lesson? You light the light that you're able to light. You do what you can in a world of darkness. And then Hashem will bless your efforts beyond what you thought is possible. Can you imagine what that message is telling them? If that would have been at the end of the war, that would have been too late. This message is telling them, keep on going. Don't give up. Hashem will give you the strength that you need. And even if what you think is impossible, it is impossible for one day oil to last 8 days. Why even bother to light one day if tomorrow you're going to have to go to the Tamei oil? But the lesson is, the world is filled with darkness. There is the darkness of war and violence, and the darkness of ignorance and prejudice, and the darkness of apostasy and rejection of God, hatred of the Jewish people, the darkness of assimilation, the decadence of materialism. And one could easily say, what can I do? What light can I bring? What can my children do into the world?
But Hanukkah says, you do what you can, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes over. That's the marvelous message of Hanukkah. That's when you live in a world filled with all types of darkness, individual and collectively, and you feel helpless and immobile and unable to have a significant light, you still strive to light the little bit that you have. And then Hashem blesses our efforts beyond which we thought possible. This is a real important message. This is a message that we need to hear and tell ourselves every day in Eretz Yisrael, really every day throughout the world. When we live in a world that is falling apart in so many ways, when we live in a world that our very physical survival is still an issue. The Holocaust didn't even solve that. For a few decades, the world felt sorry for us. No more. Now we are equivalent to the perpetrators of the Holocaust. But more importantly than even the physical is the idea that spiritually we can make a difference. And if we can make a difference, we have a responsibility to try to make that difference. So may HaKadosh Baruch Hu enable all of us to light the light in our lives that can banish the darkness. May it be a precursor for the Geula Shleimah.
If you want to stay for Maariv, there'll be a Maariv minute.
What is it historically as far as